This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'dhin wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration. Accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child. And Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Thank you. also taking their toll on the Gaza population. Let us now go to the central Gazan city of Deir al-Balah to talk to our correspondent Moti Abu Masabeh for more updates. What are the news, Moti?
The Israeli artillery continued to shell and target the northern part of Anusarati refugee camp. Meanwhile, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli warplanes carried out several brutal air raids targeting the eastern part of the city, and the major one targeted a residential building in Abassan town in the eastern section of Khan Yunis city, leaving multiple Palestinian injuries and sparking a big fire in that targeted house. Meanwhile, two Palestinian civilians were also killed in the western, in the northern part of Rafah city after the Israeli fighter jets pounded and destroyed a residential building there. Needless to mention that the western part of Rafah city is still targeted and decimated heavily by the Israeli artillery shelling. As we speak right now, those areas are still witnessing more cruel and chronic artillery shelling, targeting different parts of the western part of Rafah city. And moving to Gaza city, the Israeli warplanes also continue to carry out more destructive raids, targeting gatherings of the Palestinian people. Two Palestinian civilians were reportedly and confirmed killed after the Israeli fighter drones attacked a gathering of the Palestinian people in the western part of Gaza city. Their dead bodies are still in the state there, and they were completely, as you know, ripped apart in light of that destructive attack. And when it comes to the eastern part of Gaza city, the Israeli warplanes carried out an air raid targeting a residential building in a Nafaq area in the Daraj neighborhood, killing three Palestinian civilians. Meanwhile, the Israeli artillery shelling continued heavily against Azatun neighborhood in the southern part of Gaza city. And as you know, the current situation in the northern part of Gaza Strip is still beyond catastrophic. What the Palestinian people is stranded in those areas, they are still trapped under the heavy bombardments of the Israeli air base, and the artillery shelling maintained heavily and brutally against different parts of the northern section of Gaza Strip. And those Israeli occupation forces on the ground continue to detonate and destroy more residential buildings and the squares in the western part of Beit Lahia city. And as you know, the Israeli attacks are still intensified also against Beit Hanun city, which is still facing another ground offensive targeting that city after the Israeli occupation forces finished, Beit Lahia city and Kamal Adwan hospital. They now turn to Beit Hanun city. Several brutal air raids were carried out and, as you know, took place targeting different parts of Beit Hanun city.
Thank you, Moti. Thank you for the update. That was Moti Abu Masabeh, our correspondent in the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah. The World Health Organization says the Israeli regime's systematic dismantling of the health system in the Gaza Strip is a death sentence for tens of thousands of Palestinians in need of health care. The reaction came after Israeli troops staged a deadly attack on Kamal Adwan Hospital and shot down one of Gaza's few remaining health centers. In a post on X, the WHO slammed the attack, adding that this horror must end and healthcare must be protected. It noted that the raid has rendered the last major health facility standing in northern Gaza inoperative. According to the organization, the attack saw major parts of the hospital burned and has forced patients in critical conditions to be transferred to another destroyed hospital. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has confirmed the raid and the abduction of a hospital director together with 240 other healthcare workers. The raid has taken place as the Israeli siege of the northern Gaza has passed over 80 days, worsening the humanitarian conditions and putting the lives of some 75,000 people at risk. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called for the immediate deployment of UN observers to Gaza hospitals to counter Israeli claims that such facilities have military use. In a statement, Hamas condemned the systematic destruction of medical facilities, in particular the recent burning of Kamal Adwan Hospital. The resistance group slammed the Israeli military for conducting a war of extermination and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. It urged the UN and international bodies to intervene and protect the remaining healthcare facilities while ensuring that they receive necessary medical supplies. Hamas held the UN and the global community historically responsible for failing to end the ongoing crisis in northern parts of the war-ravaged Strip. In an extraordinary new tragedy for the people in the Gaza Strip, four babies have died in Khan Yunis due to the cold weather over the past week. The Gaza Ministry of Health says more people are likely to freeze to death if the crisis and the lack of fuel continues. Our correspondent Ahmed Anajar reports from Khan Yunis.
This worn-out tent is the makeshift shelter of Sila Al-Fasih's family. It was home to a Palestinian baby girl who died inside it last Wednesday in Khan Yunis because her heart stopped due to the frigid temperatures. After her birth, she began her life in this tent for the displaced, which, like her fragile body, is barely withstanding the harsh weather.
We live in this worn-out tent with no proper clothes, mattresses, or blankets. After months of suffering, my wife gave birth to Sila. We couldn't provide her with the necessary clothing or warm supplies as we were displaced from Gaza City and lost everything. Last Wednesday, we woke up to find her like a piece of ice and her color was blue. I quickly took her to the UK Medfield Hospital, but the doctors told me that she had frozen to death as her heart stopped due to the shivering temperatures.
The Ministry of Health announced that at least four newborn babies lost their lives in makeshift camps due to freezing temperatures, a lack of essential means of warmth, and the severe conditions of these shelters. They further warned that more children could perish should this deprivation persist.
Unfortunately, the four cases that you mentioned, they were below 1 month of old. All of them were in the tents in the near the seashore. All of them, they were extremely hypothermic. They were arrested at the tent and came to the hospital. In fact, we see, unfortunately, 5 to 6 cases every day, but they are reaching the reception room alive, and we are dealing with them. We are doing the resuscitation for them. But these four cases that you mentioned, they were already died at the tent and came to the hospital. This is due to hypothermia, as we mentioned. You know, this unit is unable to move, unable to produce energy.
In Gaza, children are born and die without ever experiencing warmth or safety. Their short lives are overshadowed by the suffering caused by the Israel's genocidal policies, which ultimately claim their lives through bombs, starvation, or the cold grip of death. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
The Palestinian resistance group Hamas has called on Muslim worshippers to increase their presence at Al-Aqsa Mosque to protect it against its Judaization planned by the Israeli regime. Hamas has said Israel is trying to strengthen its settlement activities in the occupied Al-Quds city, Judaize it, and completely control the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance group underlined that Palestinians will do their utmost to thwart the Israeli plots. Hamas's call followed another desecration of the Holy Mosque by the Israeli's far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir on Thursday. It was Ben-Gvir's first visit to the compound since 2022. Based on an agreement signed between the Israeli regime and Jordan, non-Muslim prayers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque is banned. Settlers in the Israeli-occupied territories have once again taken to the streets calling for an immediate Gaza ceasefire deal and the return of captives held there. In Tel Aviv, protested against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's cabinet and its handling of the conflict in Gaza. The regime's police scuffled with the protesters, especially in Al-Quds, pushing some people to the ground. These weekly protests have been ongoing for a year now, with demonstrators accusing Netanyahu of deliberately avoiding a deal and prolonging the war on Gaza so that he could remain in power. Over 100 captives are still held in Gaza, and around half of them are believed to be still alive. Let us now go to Bethlehem. Mazen Kumsir, Palestinian scientist and author, is with us. Very good to have you on the program, Mazen. What do you think about the significance of these rallies every week? We're witnessing them, but to no avail.
Well, the Israeli public clearly is continuing its demonstrations, demanding the release of hostages, demanding a deal, even though they know and everybody knows that the regime's government, Netanyahu and the people around him, do not want any deal. They see this as an opportunity for building empire, for doing a corridor between the country here and Iraq via southern Syria. So they know what is in plan, and they know that this government is not really interested in the lives of their relatives or people that are held in Gaza, nor, of course, with the lives of the Palestinians, who the Israeli public, by and large, supports the extermination campaign and the genocide campaign. So I don't see much changing in the internal dynamics of the Israeli political system, since it's built on pillage, on colonialism, and on theft and destruction, and it will not change.
What do you think is going to take for the international community to do something just about this, to put an end to all these atrocities?
We as Palestinians, you know, are losing our faith in the international community. The people resisting is the only thing that can help. People resisting by various means, including boycotts, divestment, sanctions. This is the only way forward, because the international community and the United Nations World Health Organization is ignoring an ongoing extermination campaign. We saw what happened in Kamal Adwan's hospital and taking the beautiful director there, most humane, humanitarian person I know. They kidnapped him and emptied the hospital and burned it, burned patients and doctors alive. So I think, you know, we are losing our faith in something called the international community.
Thank you. Very interesting to get your perspective, Mazen Qumsi, a Palestinian scientist and author, joining us from Bethlehem. Now let us go to South Korea. Nearly 100 people have been killed after a plane crash landed at an airport in South Korea. The plane with 181 people on board was attempting a belly landing at Muan International Airport in the south of the country when it caught fire. Local officials say the airplane was, quote, almost completely destroyed and there is little chance of survival. The cause of the accident is presumed to be a bird strike combined with adverse weather conditions. However, the exact cause is expected to be announced after a thorough investigation. The Yemeni army says they've brought down an American MQ-9 surveillance drone spying on the country. Let's listen to a statement by the spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces.
The air defenses of the Yemeni armed forces shot down an American MQ-9 aircraft while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al Baitha Governorate. The aircraft was shot down with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the 13th time that our air defenses were able to shoot down during the Battle of the Promised Conquest and the Holy Jihad in support of Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed their continuation in confronting all attempts by the enemies to undermine the sovereignty of our country, and that they are continuing their operations in support of Gaza, and that these operations will not stop until the aggression on Gaza stops and the siege is lifted.
Iran's foreign minister says Iran and China are more determined than ever to uphold the rule of law and preserve stability in the face of expanding conflict in the region and malign attempts at domination on the global level. Abbas Araghchi made this comment in a post on X during his visit to China. The minister stated that the Iran-China strategic partnership is ironclad because it is underpinned by cultural and civilizational bonds and rooted in shared values and interests. Referring to a joint Iran-China statement on bilateral cooperation made on Saturday, Araghchi said the two countries believe that the West Asia belongs to its people and that its future should be determined by its people. Araghchi has met with his Chinese counterpart as well as the Secretary General of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to explore ways of deepening ties. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps has dismantled several terrorist cells in the southeastern province of Sistan and Balochistan. The commander of the IRGC's special forces says the terror cells were disbanded as part of drills against a separatist grouping that styles itself as Jaish al-Adl. Brigadier General Mohammad Hosseini says the IRGC also launched operations against the safe houses of the terror grouping deep inside the Iranian territory. The general says the operations dealt a structural blow to the group that has been behind a series of terrorist attacks against Iranian security forces in the southeast over the past years. And that is a wrap for this hour's news. Thank you so much. Stay with us for more.
World is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Thank you.
limelight.
Not only has the Zionist regime killed more women and children in the first year of the assault on Gaza than in any other equivalent time period in a conflict in the past 20 years, but the ruthless inhumanity imposed on pregnant women and infants is particularly acute. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Christmas songs have been blasting out over the sound systems of shops over in the UK for weeks now. They alternate between gratingly jolly seasonal jingles and in slightly more upmarket shops, chords of angelic voices retelling the Christmas story. The irony of this whole soundtrack to the festive season, and in particular of those carols proclaiming no room at the inn, is mostly lost on the customers thronging to fill their shopping bags with seasonal must-haves. The truth is there would be plenty of room at the time and at the inns of Bethlehem for Mary and Joseph today, the hotels of the town being largely empty, its tourist trade, which was already hit hard by coronavirus, is now wholly decimated by the escalation of Israeli regime violence in the West Bank and its ongoing massacres in Gaza. Of course, to even knock at the doors of the hotels of the little town would require the young couple to be able to travel from Nazareth and reach Bethlehem in the first place. The route by car or by foot would be considerably more complicated today than covering that same distance by donkey over 2,000 years ago. Military checkpoints, forbidden roads, and a 270-mile separation barrier, a combination of concrete walls, military patrolled roads, and barbed wire fences due to reach 440 miles in length, once completed and illegal under international law, all blocked away. Not only would their journey there be complicated, they would not be guaranteed return. In two large waves of forced expulsion and denial of return, the Zionist regime at its establishment in 1948 Nakba and after its occupation of the rest of historical Palestine in 1967 ensured that hundreds of thousands of Palestinians could not return to the homes and villages from which they came. This was most dramatic in 1948, when some two-thirds of the entire indigenous Palestinian population at the time was forcibly expelled and denied the right of return. After conducting a census in September 1967, the Zionist regime deployed similar measures to complicate or thwart the residency status of some 270,000 people found to be absent in the immediate aftermath of war, either because they had fled during the conflict or were abroad for study, work, or other reasons. Since then, of course, the Zionist regime's obsession with the demographic threat has determined policy over who can and cannot receive permits to stay, whether in occupied territory or Israel. For two decades now, for instance, the Zionist regime has prevented citizens of Palestinian origin from securing residencies for their spouses if these are from occupied territory. Indeed, Joseph, supposedly from Bethlehem and Mary of Nazareth, would not, under the present regime, have been allowed to live together. The use of a census to control populations, on the other hand, would have been familiar to the young couple. The Roman-appointed Jewish client, King Herod, was supposed to have carried out a massacre of firstborn sons in order to preempt the prophesied coming of a new king. The birth itself would be much more humiliating today than merely being born in a manger. Palestinian women face difficulties far more dehumanizing and morally reprehensible than the fallings with which their ancestor was met. For years, Palestinian women have been repeatedly detained at Israeli regime checkpoints throughout illegally occupied Palestine. 13 years ago, The Lancet, a British medical journal, recorded that between 2000 and 2007, 10% of pregnant Palestinian women were delayed at checkpoints every year while traveling to give birth in hospital. Delays that caused 69 deaths at checkpoints and the deaths of 5 mothers and 35 infants. This, of course, pales with the experience of pregnant women in Gaza over the last 14 months. Not only has the Zionist regime killed more women and children in the first year of the assault on Gaza than in any other equivalent time period in a conflict in the past 20 years, but the ruthless inhumanity imposed on pregnant women and infants is particularly acute. As far back as April, the International Rescue Committee, IRC, reported that most of the 183 women who on average give birth daily in Gaza lack access to trained midwives, doctors, or healthcare facilities as a result of the Zionist regime's genocidal violence. And for an estimated 155,000 pregnant and breastfeeding women in Gaza, as of December last year, anxiety and malnutrition are critical risk factors. The IRC notes this number would have risen exponentially since then. According to the United Nations Population Fund, in October, thousands of pregnant women are on the verge of famine and in famine-like conditions. Beit Lahm Stifel Torah Strait might today leave it quiet, but it is far from still, as the lyrics would have it. Last year, on Christmas Day itself, the birthplace of Jesus was raided by the Zionist regime army, a regular occurrence that includes the 2002 siege of the Church of the Nativity itself. All this, of course, is a distant reality under the din of the Christmas jingles in shops up and down the UK. It is even a distant reality in the annual Nativity plays performed in primary schools across the country when proud parents help their beloved offspring to learn lines in preparation for their part in retelling of the story of the coming of Christ. In the modern-day woke world of inclusion and diversity of representation, schools might resist casting the dark-haired girl in the class as Mary. They might have boys playing angels. They might place girls in crowns as kings. Tea towels will be shoved on heads and secured by length of cord, and there will be a top dress and a headscarf for Mary, who will sit piously on a stool. But judging by silence at seasonal events last year, by the deafening silence from most schools and the whole educational establishment throughout the Zionist regime's campaign of genocide, and by the treatment of university students demonstrating against genocide, the irony of the school nativity will at best go unspoken and at worst be deliberately overlooked. Far more chillingly, the thoughts of the children, their parents and teachers will no doubt be far from the children of Gaza, and indeed all of Palestine, denied so much more than a crib for a bed. And so it will come to pass in these days that the celebration of the birth of Jesus, the Savior, child, whom they praise for his compassion for the poor and mean and lowly, will be exposed unequivocally as a hollow, superficial imitation of the very message it purports to represent.
iranradio.ir. What you just heard was an Arabi English radio program. From Beirut.
Hello and welcome to today's episode, broadcasting from the heart of Beirut, and I'm your host, Farah Hatwi. Gaza woke up to a tragic morning after the Israeli entity burned Kamal Adwan Hospital and caused significant destruction to the building after a raid described as barbaric by local authorities. However, escalation in attacks between Yemen and Israel continues, as also this morning sirens sounded across Israeli-occupied areas in southeastern Palestine and the West Bank, following a Yemeni missile attack early on Saturday. This is the 10th ballistic missile fired from Yemen at Israeli targets in the past month. But in Syria, the new governor of the Syrian capital, Damascus, assigned by al-Julani, says the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham HTS militant group, which took over the Arab country earlier this month, is after establishing peace with the Israeli regime. I will be discussing these latest updates with my guest here, Dr. Leila Hatoum, editor-in-chief MENA and Censored. Hello and welcome to this episode.
Always a pleasure.
Leila, let's start from Yemen. A ballistic missile launched from Yemen has triggered sirens in dozens of towns and cities in Al-Quds area, as well as the southeastern Najaf. The Israeli military claimed that its anti-air missile systems intercepted and shot down the projectile before it crossed into the skies over the occupied territories. However, we do know that this has been happening for a very long time now. Israel intercepts some of the missiles attacked from Yemen or launched from Yemen. But even if they intercept these missiles, also debris fall on the people, and also there are casualties. So can you tell us more about this, despite the fact that if this escalation is causing real defense or not?
Throughout the past month, I'm going to speak only about the past month, the Yemenis continued with their agenda to stop the genocide in Gaza and attack the Israeli entity to force it to actually stop that genocide. None of the ballistic missiles that were shot by Yemen against the Israeli entity, which is basically the Palestinian occupied territories, was intercepted by any of their Iron Dome, David slingshot, Arrow 2 and 3, and other air defenses. The Israelis always lie about that, and later on we see the consequences. The best proof on that is the people's footage. You get to see the footage of buildings burning or certain military sites from a distance. You have columns of smoke. So at the end of the day, when the Israelis say that they have intercepted a missile, you cannot intercept a 12 Mach ballistic missile, hypersonic ballistic missile, with just mere air defenses like the Iron Dome. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen them in the past. They just cross next to it, but they can never run course with it, like or touch it.
Exactly. When you say that they have intercepted by the Iron Dome or the defense system, when you say that these missiles have been intercepted, people think that, well done, they did a great job, the missiles have been intercepted. But there are a lot of ramifications over that, as you are highlighting. But again, Israeli media blackout is not showing it. What about the rush and the panic? Millions run into shelters. How can you describe that?
A million settlers?
Settlers.
Look, at the end of the day, I have one of my friends.
Over a million?
Yemen. Yeah, over 1.2 million so far. We have one of my friends in Yemen. He actually wrote a really cute tweet. He said, I'm sleeping here in the warmth of my bed, enjoying my night, while the Israelis are spending their night in the shelters. And this actually puts a smile on my face, because somebody has to give them a taste of their own medicine, the Israelis.
Okay.
And there's something else that people don't know. The hypersonic missiles, Palestine 2, they called it Palestine 2, the Yemenis.
Yes.
If at any point it gets intercepted, the warhead actually disseminates into multiple bombs that each takes its own trajectory. So it's more dangerous to intercept it rather than allow it to go its course. Colonel Zaid Salmi of the Yemeni Armed Forces. Yeah. Lebanese, they tell me if they have multiple targets along the way.
Okay. Yesterday, actually, a very interesting post, a very interesting article I was reading in the Washington Post. According to an article in the Washington Post that was published yesterday, the Houthis were once considered by Israeli security establishment to be a more manageable threat than Hamas in Gaza or Hezbollah in Lebanon.
They miscalculated the distance and the willpower of the Yemenis. The thing is, the
Yemenis, can say that.
They have a mindset of their own. Look, the whole world can work based on an agenda, and the Yemenis have their own agenda. They never stopped over the past decade fighting for their own country, and they decided to fight for Gaza as well. Have they stopped? No. The British, the Americans, the whole world, NATO, have been attacking them for what? For the past 14 months? Have they stopped? No. They weren't able to do so. So are they manageable? No. They're not a proxy.
It's a total shock to the Israelis. It's a total shock to the administration, because according to the Washington Post, this is a threat that has not been calculated before. They gave a lot of attention to Hezbollah. They got a lot of attention to Hamas. What do we mean by attention? I mean investigations, spies, observing the group or observing the resistance for a very long time. And exactly, they have enough ideas of who to fight and where to fight and when to fight. But when it comes to Yemen, they underestimated their own power. They underestimated their own even capabilities. That's a very important factor, because now the Israelis are shocked with the amount of capabilities that the Yemenis have.
The Yemenis are the glitch in the system.
Yes?
The Yemenis are the glitch in the system, as I call them. Every effort, be it intel, military, etc., was, as you said, directed towards the enemy at or close by at bay. So be it Hezbollah, be it Hamas for the Israelis. But when it comes to the Yemenis, as you said, they underestimated them. The Yemenis, during that time, they had garnered enough experience from fighting against GCC nations and NATO powers that were fighting them for the past, since at least 2015, and they used that experience to attack the Israelis. But this is not the first time that the Yemenis actually support their Arab brothers, and the Israelis should have hedged better. But then again, I mean, at the end of the day, when you underestimate your opponent, this is what you get.
Okay. The newspaper quoted the words of an Israeli official, Leila, saying, "The Houthis are more technologically advanced than perceived by many and should not be underrated." That's also, these are the officials coming in.
Of course.
How can they deal with a threat that they don't know anything about, in your own perspective? When is that what's keeping the Israelis in chaos? In a chaos, because they underestimated, they underrated the Yemenis, and now they are in total shock of how to deal with such an enemy.
What I love about the Yemenis is that they're very secretive in terms of what they do. They only announce things when they're doing it, not before. So at the end of the day, remember, they have caught two spy rings inside Yemen over the past year, including one last week. And that spy ring has Americans, Mossad, Arabs, Yemenis in them. And they still couldn't find a way towards where the Yemenis are manufacturing their ballistic missiles, where they're manufacturing their Yafa drones, or their other missiles as well, and their submarine drones as well. So at the end of the day, the Yemenis bank on secrecy, and they are very vigilant. People perceive them as like, oh, those hooligans who live bare feet in the mountains. No, the Yemenis are much more than that. The media, it's like the media propaganda against Yemen had changed people's perspective over the past years, that Yemenis do not think that they are barbaric and they are very rural. Mm-hmm. In reality, they're very calculative, very smart, and very determined.
The article went on to say, but the cost calculus is complicated for Israel, and this is very interesting here. Houthi drones and missiles cost around several thousand dollars each, while each interception costs Israel tens of thousands of dollars at least. So here, this is keeping, of course, Israel again in an awkward position in front of international community and, of course, in front of the U.S. because they need more funding, because this is very costly and highly costly to actually, whereas the Yemenis, as the article is highlighting, every Houthi drones and missiles cost around several thousands of dollars each, which is nothing compared to the amount of money that the Israelis need to actually bring, or the amount of missiles and interceptors that the Israelis need to acquire from the United States.
You have the Iron Dome. Each Iron Dome costs about $100 million.
Yes.
And it has about 60 to 80 missiles. Each missile costs up to $80,000. So you can imagine the millions.
Speaking about huge numbers.
It's massive. And if you are actually going to fire at least two Iron Dome missiles, that's $160,000 to stop a few thousand dollar missile.
Exactly.
I mean, at the end of the day, they're running them thin when it comes to funding. But it's not only that. The idea is that when you're when you continue to send that missile towards the Israeli entity, you have a disruption of their economic activity. When people all go to the shelters, economic activity gets disrupted for a few hours. It happens at night or during the day, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
And then you have an impact also on their market, the trading.
So we're not only talking about a threat on the security of the Israelis, we're also speaking about economic losses, about, as you're highlighting, massive losses in the economy. Because also they need to ask the United States for all this funding, otherwise where would they get it from? And well, that will keep them in a very awkward
unfortunately
position.
The international world showed its complicity by continuing to fund the Israeli entity, be it sending them weapons or sending them money or supporting them basically in other means. Think about it this way. Israel's maritime trade has been completely disrupted by the Yemeni armed forces. I don't want to call them Houthis because they don't like that. Their name is actually Ansarullah.
Ansarullah, yes.
So Ansarullah, when they cut off all trade that happens from east towards the Israeli entity and vice versa, and all international ships that actually pass from Bab el-Mandab to Red Sea and the Israeli entity and vice versa, also the Mediterranean, they disrupted a $42 billion worth of maritime trade for the Israelis.
So that's huge
and that actually pinches them. They tried to actually cover that through their allies, be it the United Arab Emirates or Bahrain, but that was also disrupted.
Okay, according to the newspaper also, and this is the last paragraph that you will quote, a former official on Israel's National Council said,
when Netanyahu said he has seven fronts to fight, he didn't name Yemen, but Yemen is the seventh front. So my fear is that
now he has the Yemen on the top of the list.
And the thing is, Netanyahu doesn't have to fight Yemen alone. He has the Americans and the British continuing with their aggression against the Yemenis. They've done dozens of aggressions against Yemen throughout the past month. So the whole idea is that Netanyahu knows that if he actually moves that beehive that's called Yemen, he has allies that are going to confront it over there. But
and that's exactly what happened.
But at the end of the day, the Yemenis don't care about the cost. They've sustained so many losses over the years. It's like I pinch you and you pinch me. Who's going to shout first? The Americans cannot sustain more death in the Red Sea and the GCC area as opposed to other countries.
And that's exactly what happened this morning as the attack was conducted by the American and British aircraft who have conducted new airstrikes on the Yemeni capital, focused on Sana'a, and again Israel rushed to deny any involvement of the regime in the operation. And how lucky are the Israelis whenever they have an attack on their own space or whenever they feel a threat, you see the in a joint forces, the US and the Brits going inside and actually helping the Israelis or at least attacking the Yemenis in favor of the Israelis. And today, this morning, this is a joint force, but again we see the Israelis rushing to deny their own involvement in this as if they are calling for de-escalation between Yemenis and the Israelis.
They don't want an attack from a different front at the moment when they're actually focused totally on Gaza, wiping it out and taking over the West Bank, as well as basically killing as many people in Lebanon or basically taking over or creating a buffer zone in South Lebanon. So the whole idea is that
you're saying they're not ready for this. They want to avoid the Yemeni clash.
On their own, they're not ready. On their own, they're not ready, but they know that they have, as you said, they're very lucky they have NATO to actually do their bidding. Unfortunately, again, this is an aggression on Yemen by the international community, not by the Israeli entity, and that actually gives Yemen the right not only to self-defense, but also to attack that kind of aggression basically where they find it. So the Americans and the British, doesn't matter where they are, they can actually attack them.
Okay, and that's a very supportive zone to the Israelis. Today, when we look at the situation between the Israelis and the Yemenis, how dangerous is what the Yemeni is doing to the Israelis, and will it force for a ceasefire deal, Leila?
I don't believe that the Israelis are interested in a ceasefire deal. They're going to continue with their attacks against the people in Gaza, the Palestinians in Gaza. And the Yemenis are going to basically what you call pain the Israelis with their attacks. But at the end of the day, it's a war of attrition. Remember the former or the late Secretary General of Hezbollah, he said the war of attrition is basically whoever shouts first or cries first loses.
Yes.
The Israelis have 57 states supporting them. It will take time. The Yemenis are not going to back off. They didn't back off in the past. They're very stubborn. They're very meticulous about their work, and they're very determined.
Okay.
So it's actually a war worth monitoring. I do believe that the Yemenis are going to prevail.
When you speak of determination, we cannot deny the fact, and we cannot not speak about the solidarity that many Yemenis are showing to the Palestinians. And they are supportive of Ansarullah in a very massive way. Tens of thousands of people gathered in Sana'a on Friday to protest against the Israeli strikes and express solidarity with the Palestinians. the equation has changed and has become targeting. And this is, I quote here the words of one of the Yemenis that was actually demonstrating in favor or in solidarity with the Palestinians, Leila. And he said here, the equation has changed and has become targeting airport for airport, port for port, and infrastructure for infrastructure. This is a protester who was actually protesting in solidarity for Gaza in the Yemen, massive and million raid in favor for the Palestinians. How important is this when you see not only the administration and not only the officials and not only the resistance fighting for the in favor or in solidarity with the Gazans, but also the people of the Yemeni? I mean, even in some places or some areas where access of the resistance exists, we don't see that solidarity, Leila. We don't see that unity, or we don't see this massive support of the people to the resistance in the countries that, for example, in Lebanon, we're divided. Not all the people support the resistance, Hezbollah. But however, in Yemen, you see the strong manifestation of support.
Well, you have to remember two things. The first thing is that their society is homogeneous, kind of. Mm. And they don't have shared borders with occupied Palestine. So at the end of the day, they didn't have that much of what you call an infiltration to divide the people itself. And they were all, as you call it, I'm talking about North Yemen mainly.
Yes.
They have been under aggression for the longest time, so they understand the meaning. Whereas other countries, they had moments of peace for a long time, so people get the chance to be infiltrated by the enemy and divide them. The other thing is that Yemen never stopped supporting their Arab brothers, especially Gaza, and they're very adamant in terms of basically what you call liberating Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa.
Yes, so they are moved by this. They are actually moved
by
this.
You said it last time. You said faith, yes, and determination.
Okay.
Faith moves the Yemenis.
Okay. And where would that keep the Ansarullah? As long as they are supported by their own people in that way. Because, of course, we cannot deny that airport was targeted. And now we will speak about that. Infrastructure, massive damages from these joint attacks by the US and Britain. But still, you find them going to the streets and also supporting the Palestinians. Or supporting the Ansarullah to continue the attack on the Israelis in favor of the Palestinians. What will that tell us about the way that that the Ansarullah will function in the coming days?
No matter what, they're not going to back off. No matter what, they're not going to back off. It tells you that they're very determined and they know what they're doing. And I do believe one of their main reporters, basically one of the main media people in Yemen, actually posted on Twitter. He said, just keep your eyes on Ben Gurion. Yes. That was a few days before the Israelis and the Americans actually targeted the airport in Yemen.
Yes.
So that means Ben Gurion, among other basically dozens of Israeli airports inside the occupied Palestinian territories, are a target. And we've seen the Yemenis basically use their ballistic missiles to reach certain areas, so they're going to do it next. I do believe that they're not going to back off.
Okay. According to the article, there is a very interesting paragraph. Why is it hard for Israel to hit Yemen? And then the article went on to say there are many challenges that the newspaper highlighted. Unlike the enemies on Israeli borders, however, the Houthis, according to them, are more than 1,000 miles away. They're 2,000 kilometers, embedded in mountainous, deeply improvised country without any infrastructural center of gravity, without places or assets that are so central to their operations that striking them would incapacitate them, said a military historian here, according to the article. So there are certain difficulties in attacking the Yemenis, even if they have the will to do that. The distance, the very long distance between the Israelis and the Yemenis, and the geography also, and because of course we do know that Yemen, no other country was able to occupy it. Even if they try to actually do that, they massively failed every time in occupying that country. Not only because of the dignity and the will of the people, but because of the structure of Yemen. When we speak about the Israelis, will they be able to actually attack Yemen, or will they be able to actually bring down the Yemenis' will?
I wouldn't bank much on the distance element, because
okay,
they can use the American aircraft carrier. We saw it happen recently. They can use American bases in the GCC and British bases basically in the Mediterranean and elsewhere. So for them, distance is not a problem.
But
the
some
problem
say that you cannot demolish or you cannot overcome the Yemenis only with a military invasion.
No, of course. course. But
military
this is,
incursion.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. So when it comes to distance, because they have said distance, among other things, distance is not a hurdle for the Israelis. They can use the American aircraft carriers. They've done it before.
Okay.
But when it comes to the terrain of Yemen, think about Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm, same.
Tora Bora Mountains, it was very hard, and it's near impossible to actually take out somebody who knows his terrain better than anybody else.
Exactly.
So that terrain plays in favor of the Yemenis, and the fact that they don't have something to lose is what makes basically puts the Israelis in a predicament. What are you supposed to hit? Okay, they hit the electricity. People are used to living without electricity. What else? I mean, the whole idea is that you hit assets to pain the people and pain the government.
But there is no way you can pressure.
Exactly. Okay. So only it happens from the inside. And this is why they try to plant their spies inside to create the disruption mechanism. So they can plant bombs. They can change the way that the society thinks. They can create sedition. Mm-hmm. And they failed miserably because both their spy rings have been caught.
Okay. Let's move on to Gaza in order to divide the time equally between all topics. Gaza woke up to a tragic morning after the Israeli entity burned Kamal Adwan Hospital and caused significant destruction to the building after a raid described as barbaric by local authorities. Of course, before even bombing this hospital, it lacked the fuel for the generators. It lacked medical supplies, equipment, even the staff. Today, when we stand in front of such a tragedy, and this is not the first hospital that Israel has been targeting in North Gaza, however, it was the only functioning, the last functioning hospital over there. What's the significance of that, and how can we actually perceive such a scenario?
The Israelis have completely demolished Gaza's health infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We had doctors being killed, shot, executed. That's a war crime. Recently, five doctors and paramedics were killed 2 days ago, actually. They're detaining doctors from Kamal Adwan Hospital,
yes,
among other
yes.
doctors. But the whole idea is that it's not burning the hospital or bombing it. They've been doing it since basically October last year, right? So 14, 15 months already. What they're doing is basically pushing the envelope more. They started by targeting the hospitals, then burning the ICUs, then killing the babies in incubators, then bombing the hospitals directly, and now burning them completely. What they've reached now is the next level, and they're seeing the international complicity and silence about it.
So
they get euphoric about it. They're crazy. So what they're doing now is basically snatching doctors and executing them.
Yes.
Directly.
Amid international silence.
That's the last red line. They crossed it, and nobody did anything. So what
but
does
what
that
will
you?
The Israelis benefit from attacking the healthcare system inside Palestine? And how can the healthcare system, or even the medical staff, or the medics, or the paramedics, cause a threat to the Israelis? In what way?
If you can help a child not lose one of its limbs, not become an amputee, by giving it the proper medical treatment, that's a threat to the Israelis, because they look at every Palestinian child, every Palestinian woman, every elderly as a threat. If you get to save them, that means the continued and the continuous persistence of the Israeli of the Palestinians to live. And that basically stands as a sore thorn in the eyes of the Israelis, because it reminds them that they are an occupation force. Until they wipe out everybody, that's when they can take over the land. So as long as there are medics, paramedics, and basically doctors helping out those people to live, that's a threat to the Israelis.
Okay, so it's a deliberate action, actually, to manifest the idea that you're highlighting amid international violence.
Of course.
Okay, Gaza's health ministry reports that Israeli's military has taken dozens of Kamal Adwan Hospital staff, including director Hussam Abu Saifa, for interrogation, while the fate of many patients is unknown after troops forcibly cleared the medical facility. How do you actually, where is the WHO? Where are the international laws? Where are the people that actually condemn such actions? Is this why Israel is continuing in these massacres and these atrocities? They're actually interrogating the head of the staff, and under the pretext that this is it's a Hamas stronghold. This is always the pretext that's used by Israel every time they attack a new hospital.
Do you know what's funny? Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya himself had called upon the Israelis to come and check there's no Hamas, basically, inside the hospital or underneath it.
Yes.
What did the Israelis do? Bombed the hospital, burned it, and took everybody as a hostage. And they're interrogating them. I fear that he might face the same fate as Dr. Manil Birsh.
Yes. That was... ended in a very, his life ended in a very bad way. Okay.
Dr. Adnan Elbrush, I'm sorry, it was like, because yes. Dr. Adnan Elbrush continues to write about what's happening on the ground as well in Gaza, both in Arabic and in English.
Yes.
And he's trying to tell the international community, look what's happening to us and nobody cares. As a person who studied international law and specifically humanitarian laws, I don't believe in international law anymore. It's only done to help the strong against the weak.
Okay. The Israeli army claimed that they have secured the safe evacuation for patients and wounded people, and claiming that the hospital had been used by Hamas as a stronghold, which has been denied by the Hamas movement. And this is the pretext that they always use in order to actually move on with these atrocities and these crimes. The UN World Health Organization said Israeli systematic dismantling of Gaza's health system is a death sentence for tens of thousands of Palestinians. Let's speak about the ramification of the attacking the hospitals, because it's not only about attacking the hospitals, the staff, the paramedics, it's also about what can happen after that. I mean, now, if Israel bombs a building and these people need to go to the hospital, there is no hospital to go to. And that's another crime and a massacre that is to be committed in the future.
They're creating a situation where it's unlivable. Gaza becomes unlivable for people, so they have to move. Ethnic cleansing of the land. Would you stay in a place where if you get sick, you don't have anybody to help you out, be it a doctor or a hospital or a clinic? Mm. And forget about those who get injured. People or women who actually want to give birth.
Exactly.
If there are no doctors to help them out, that's basically massive, because it puts the woman and the unborn baby's lives at risk. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, they're creating these unfavorable condition, living conditions for the Palestinians to move out of the land so they can take over.
Our time is up. Leila Hatoum, Editor-in-Chief, MENA Uncensored, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be here with more political updates. Until then, stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome again to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Nur Muhammad are the guest speakers for today's discussion. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Nur Muhammad, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's episode of the program Viewpoints, we want to talk about the concept of basira. There is a rough translation to that. It can be translated as foresight or insight. But Quranic references and its applications of this concept in the modern world is also another important aspect or angle to this concept. Sheikh Nur Muhammad, let's start with you, brother. First of all, define basira for us. What is it exactly? And do you agree with my translation? I mean, insight or foresight, it's better to say, call it.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, to some extent, these are good translations. For example, insight or foresight is, as I said, to some extent, it can convey the message and the meaning of the basira.
Yes.
But let's go to the meaning of basira itself. Before that, let me share one verse, beautiful verse of the Quran. For example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, قُلْ هَذِهِ سَبِيلِي أَدْءُ إِلَى اللَّهِ عَلَى بَصِيرَةٍ أَنَا وَمَنِ اتَّبَعَنِي. Noble Prophet, quoting from Noble Prophet Muhammad, actually ordering him to say that this is my way. I invite to the path of Allah, and I invite to the path of Allah and my companions, those people who followed me.
All right.
Ala basiratin, with a kind of insight.
All right.
You know, invitation toward Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with insight, which means that with full understanding. Of course, I do not claim that this is the exact meaning of basira.
Okay.
But I just want to expand the meaning of basira. All what right. does it mean? Invitation toward Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with full awareness.
All right.
To the consequences, to the means, how to invite to the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and to have kind of comprehensive and inclusive understanding of the context of the invitation and so on and so forth,
mm-hmm.
is absolute and fullest awareness. Mm-hmm. You may call it basira.
Okay.
You know,
it is very much different from having a kind of superficial, simple knowledge about the specific topics or something like that, isn't it?
This is part of that. Okay. You know, maybe the first level of the basira.